Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, January 25th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
God has brought you to our convent school so that you can see the error of your ways.
I already did the whole seminary thing, but thanks anyway. Besides, it didn't all turn out as well as God might have hoped, right? I mean, just look at me. I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I'm happy to report that Rob Rosen is back with us again this week for part two of our conversation about his life and his work. And what a pleasure it is to have him, so to speak, because we get to savor even more of the erotic mind of this enormously prolific author. If you somehow miss part one of this delightful chat, you don't have to worry, because it, like all of my podcasts, is archived on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you have to do is search for podcast number 180, and voila! But be sure to use the pound sign when you search. Rob will also read again from his published work. You're going to so love this one. And for more of Rob, be sure to visit him on his website, therobrosen.com, or his Facebook page, facebook.com/therobrosen.
Why, you give me the respect that I'm entitled to!
Maybe because you're creeping me out, that's why. Today's podcast sponsor is once again So Hard. So Hard is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But So Hard is not just any old Viagra knockoff, no siree. It's a pure, all-natural herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused. Listen, I've tried So Hard, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard on my new product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Use the site's search function, type in So Hard, and you can read my comments and evaluation. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did.
Now let's get to work.
Hey, that's my line. Okay, on with the show. Rob Rosen, welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. I'm delighted that you have more time to spend with us, because I was just getting to the meat of you, so to speak, as it were, last week.
That's the best part.
Yeah. Oh, I'll say.
There you go.
Pictures at 11, folks.
Good luck finding it.
Oh, stop.
No. I mean online.
Oh, I see.
That came out wrong.
That's it. But cute, nonetheless.
There you go.
So, let's pick up where we left off last week, and we were talking about, when we ended last week, we were talking about writing the two different kinds of erotica, the short story and your erotic novels. You mentioned, and I think those who in our audience who follow this series know that a lot of women are writing gay erotica, and you know, there's different kinds of things like slash fiction and whatnot. Do you know that if your audience consists of many women?
I know for a fact. Actually,
yeah, good for you.
Yes. When I get fan mail, at least 50% of the time it's from a straight woman.
No kidding.
Yeah, at least. And not only that, for those of you who read book reviews online, mm-hmm. the blogs have really taken over publicizing gay fiction out there,
right.
And most of them are run by women.
Yes.
And the two big ones, bookwenches.com and darkdivas.com, which reviews thousands of gay books, because there's a lot of online fiction and ebook fiction,
right,
that's
right,
out there now. It's reviewed by women and read by women and publicized by women and straight women. So it might be shocking to listeners, but it's not shocking to authors, because we know that there's a big female readership. Straight women love hot gay sex.
Right.
It's not much of a secret in our little niche community.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I got the same kind of response to the movies that I did with my production company, Daddy O Productions, and I had lots and lots of women, you know, contact me and tell me how much they enjoyed, you know, our movies, and you know, it's unrepentant gay sex pornography, my favorite kind, and they loved it. And one of the things that I used to ask them is, you know, what was it about that you liked about it? And they would respond with things like, well, you know, here's the object of my desire, men, and, you know, there's
two men,
whatever.
A bunch of men.
That's right. And yeah, they're all enjoying themselves. I get to watch, and I'm not being distracted by, you know, some phony baloney lady, you know, with, you know, augmented tits and, you know, screaming and fingernails and dancer heels and all that stuff that I really hate about, you know, straight identified pornography. So I thought it was great. So in light of the fact that you have such a sizable female following, are you conscious of writing differently? I mean, would you write differently if you knew that your audience was predominantly male or female?
No, nothing. I wouldn't change the way. No, who cares? If they like it, they like it.
That's right.
I hope they do. Yeah. And I'm successful enough that I guess they do, you know.
They do.
Yeah. I don't write scat. Let's clarify.
Okay.
No. But yeah, I would never change what I write. I write what I enjoy, and I hope that other people enjoy it as much.
Interesting. And yet, you like we talked about last week, is you to some degree conform to the expectations of the people who are putting out, you know, calls for
submissions. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like if they're asking for a plumber story, you're not going to write about a violinist necessarily,
right,
unless he's a part-time plumber.
But, you know, that makes life so much easier. You know, it's like, uh-huh, Here's what I want. That's great. That's what I give them. It doesn't require a lot of thinking on my part. I just have to develop a framework about what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So if they're looking for truckers, I have half my story right there.
Yes.
I know my main character or the guy he's going to fuck is going to be a trucker.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
There you go. Right. Or a fireman or a policeman,
uh-huh,
or,
uh-huh,
you know, a surfer.
Uh-huh.
It's simple.
Yes.
And then you get to think of all these great words for dick that go around. You know, if it's a trucker, you have drive shaft and, you know, what have you.
A fireman, it's a hose. And
a hose. And a surfer, it's the longboard. I mean, come on. It's great fun.
Do you ever find yourself mixing metaphors?
I don't. That would be bad. But, you know, two of my favorite stories were, I'm fortunate that something we didn't discuss the last time we talked was, two-thirds of my writing is gay fiction, 90% of that is erotica, but a third of my writing is speculative fiction for straight audiences. I write a lot of horror, fantasy, sci-fi, all with a humorous bent,
mm-hmm,
And I have about...
Do you write, under...
No, my name. My name.
No,
yeah,
kidding.
So I write for straight and gay audiences. I have about 25 anthologies of my work that's in for speculative fiction. But I've been really fortunate that my editor at Men and Freshmen encourages me to write gay, erotic, speculative fiction. I think there's a big call for it. I love it. Mm-hmm. You don't see that many anthologies in print of speculative erotica,
could you define speculative for us again?
So I have speculative is that whole genre of science fiction, fantasy, anything that's not, you know, in the real world.
Okay.
Horror, anything like that. So two of my favorite stories that I've written for Men involve aliens. One is called Invasion of the Butt Snatchers. the alien had two dicks, which was a lot of fun, and the other one was called We Come in Peace. there you go. And so, you know, I those things come from my head. You know, Men and Freshmen have never.
I hope you donate that head to science when it's over.
Seriously. I also had a story in Men magazine called "The Iceman Cometh" about sex with a Yeti. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's great. You know, it's great that they have never limited me to just, you know, standard gay sex, which is great. I love standard gay sex. Don't get me wrong, but it's so much more fun in my head if I get to do something unusual.
You don't find it wearing, like, oh, do I have to? And you know,
never,
never. That's
never,
so
ever, ever, never. Now, the only difference is when I used to write for Two Magazine. I wrote for them for about 4 years. That was really fun because they would send me the pictorials. They'd send me the layouts.
Bad luck for you, huh?
It was great. There was about 3 months before the magazines came out, they'd send me the layouts, and then I just had to come up with a story around the pictures. Now, you talk about easy. I mean, there it is. A, B, C, D. You know, I knew what color hair they had. I knew what size dicks they had. I knew who was the bottom. I just had to come up with a story. Yeah. And so that was the only time that's the only time I ever had limits on what I wrote was, you know, those. But that, you know, that was just easy money for me.
Mm-hmm. Like falling off a log.
Yeah.
Basically. Wow. That is so amazing. I'm going to just come right out and ask you to read again if you're up for it. Because
oh, sure.
I can't wait.
Well.
And you promised smutty, smutty, smutty.
I'm going to read. Well, I find inspiration in the everyday, and then I try to turn it into something, you know, smutty. And I love that word, smut.
I do too.
Sounds like what it is.
Favorite things.
Smut. It's kind of like smegma and jizz. It sounds like what it is. Great, great work. But this was in the August issue of Freshman this year, just a couple months ago. It's called A Groovy Kind of Love. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the 40-year anniversary of Woodstock was happening in August, mm-hmm. and so 3 months beforehand I wrote the story, and I thought, wouldn't it be neat to have hot man sex at Woodstock? And this is actually, I think, one of my most romantic stories that I wrote all year. I love this story. I'm going to read the beginning and the middle.
Okay.
You could still go online and buy the copy of August 2009 Freshman if you want to read the end. But there is hotness in the story.
Okay.
But that, you know, it's very easy to find inspiration for me. I see something like that and I go, oh, okay, that'd be hot to write about in a way that no one, you know, in a way that I hadn't read it before. Hot gay man sex at Woodstock. And then on a total side note, one of my favorite things about writing for Men and Freshmen, and has always been my favorite thing, is seeing how the artist puts that comic picture,
right,
you know, always
right, right, right.
And Men and Freshmen they hire some of the best artists out there.
You know, some of them have been guests on this show.
Yes, I know. Yes. So there's a really good picture that accompanies A Groovy Kind of Love. Actually, there's two pictures that they frequently put two or three pictures this past year in the issues. So let me just take some water and I'll read.
Good.
It doesn't start off smutty. It actually is it's a flashback that ends up being a flash forward at the end, and it does flash forward 40 years. So,
wow.
Okay, A Groovy Kind of Love. The concert got off to a late start. No worries, because so did we, my group of six, best buddies traveling across two states in our beat-up van, ready to change the world. We settled in, found a patch of barely-there grass to lay some threadbare blankets on, and waited, anxiously, breathlessly. The stage was off in the distance, the sound traveling just well enough. Then again, the show around us was just as spectacular. Half-naked, all-naked, painted on, tie-dyed, long-haired hippies, flower children, college kids, young parents and tiny toddlers, freaks, wannabes, black, white, and all shades in between, a collective of humanity, a sight to see. Speaking of sights, I spotted him during Santana's Persuasion. And I lost him at dawn, the next day, as Roger Daltrey sang, "See me, feel me." He was way off to my right, a good 50 yards away, hunkered down in a cross-legged squat, his head tilted upward, his long, dirty blonde hair cascading down his back. His eyes were shut tight, a smile spread wide across his angelic face, a long goatee hanging precariously off his chin. The crowd faded from my line of vision. The roar of the reveler suddenly went mute. I stood up and walked over, my friends neither caring nor noticing my departure. I sat down next to him, or a foot or so to his side. Santana was gone, and Canned Heat was singing, "A Change Is Gonna Come." He opened his eyes, stared for a moment at the stage, then turned his head my way. He nodded and grinned. "Peace," he said, flashing me his fingers in a V-shape. "Groovy day, huh?" "Oh, yeah," I managed. "You all alone?" The smile widened, dimples appearing on both sides of his cheeks. "Nope, you're here." Then he pointed to the throngs on all sides, and all of them. I laughed, sidling over an inch or two. "I meant, did you come alone?" "Oh no, dude, I never come alone. More fun with someone else." Now it was his turn to laugh, the sound like pebbles being tossed by the ocean. "Why, are you offering?" I coughed, a red flush creeping up my neck that quickly splashed across my face. Free love hadn't worked its way to my neck of the woods just yet. Probably never did, actually. Still, the thought was enticing. That's not exactly what I meant. "Yeah, I stammer a bit when I'm nervous." And right about then, nervous was an understatement. He winked, his own rump moving over. "Got it, dude. Was just joshing with ya. I'm here with friends. Got separated on a joint search. Lost the friends, but found the weed. No sweat. We know where to meet up later. You?" I pointed to my group, all of them now lost in conversation with the gaggle of hippie chicks, then turned to watch him as he removed the joint in question, my eyes riveted to his slender fingers. "Name Steven," I told him. "Glenn," he replied, lifting the long tapered object up for inspection. "Smoke?" I nodded gratefully. "Please." He held it to his lips and lit it, sucking in, his eyes in a squint. Then he leaned over. "Shotgun," he announced, inhaling the word, his lips suddenly on mine, soft like a cloud. The acrid smoke exhaled into my mouth, down my throat, and deep into my lungs. His face retracted an inch, his eyes wide, open, steely blue, wafts of smoke trailing out of his mouth. He smiled. I exhaled. "Geez, I've never kissed a dude in front of a 500,000 people before, or any people before, for that matter." He laughed, nudging all the way over, his billowing slacks pressed up snug against my denim, his hand on my knee. "Should do it more often," he said. "Good for the soul." His face drew nearer, his eyes now sparkling like diamonds. Again his lips found mine, only without the smoke this time. They mashed into mine and parted, his deft tongue snaking its way inside, coiling around, his hand rising up to caress my cheek and neck, causing instant lumpage. "Yep," I agreed. "My soul feels better already." I casually glanced down, his crotch now expanding, the thin material doing little to hide his burgeoning stiffy. "Yours is looking pretty happy, too," I added, impressed. He pressed his hand into his lap. "Oh, yeah, sucker's on cloud nine." He grinned, a wicked smile that sent my heart madly beating. "Want to see it?" He took another deep toke, his cheeks sucking in, and again shotgunned it down into my lungs. I did my best to hold it in, but coughed out most of it. "See it? Here?" He shrugged. Good a place as any. He lifted his rear up and slid the blanket out from under him, the material billowing out from under him, the material billowing over our heads and wafting down on top of us, the light pouring through in a funky kaleidoscope of color. "Alone, surrounded by a 500,000 of our closest friends," he quipped, as Mountain took the stage. Again he leaned in, his hands on both my cheeks, his lips flush on mine, the kiss soft, tender, perfect as the pot took hold of my brain, sending a warm eddy through my belly and a burst of fireworks off behind my eyelids. He reached down and wriggled out of his cottony slacks, his prick springing out, hard as granite, swaying as he plopped back down. The crowd erupted in frenzied applause, more than likely responding to Mountain's for Yasgur's farm than our antics. I reached down to hold his prick in my hand, feeling it pulse with blood, the wide mushroom head dribbling out a bead of slick precum. Glenn's eyes fluttered and he let out a rumbling moan, just barely discernible through the enveloping uproar. I bent down and slapped the head against my lips before downing it, inch by steely inch, the hot flesh filling up my mouth and throat as a gagging tear trailed down my cheek. Glenn's hands stroked my long hair, though not half as long as his, as he moved in closer, our bodies meshed together in one large blanketed lump of flesh. I'll stop there. Gets much hotter. Yeah.
I love it.
There's penetration, and the good thing about penetration in the 60s is I don't have to figure out a way to come up with a rubber and a lube.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the hardest thing about writing erotica is you try to be in the moment and you try to, like, have this, you know, hot sex that's unplanned, but then, well, where is there a rubber and some lube that fits into the story that makes sense, you know? And, of course, back in 69, you didn't need a rubber and lube.
That's so true. Absolutely. Do you write other stuff besides stuff that is commonly thought of as erotic? You said you write short stories, yep, you know, for straight sites and magazines and stuff like that. That is not erotic. Anything else?
It's not in us.
No, I mean, children's stories or, you know,
children would love my stuff.
Because a lot of the authors that I've interviewed so far, they, you know, they do other kind of stuff. They, you know, do historical fiction and they do or children's stories, and others write for, you know, essays for magazines and stuff like that that are, you know, significantly not erotica.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, to tell you the truth, I'm so busy just writing what I'm writing. I rarely have time for anything else. This week alone, I wrote two short stories. I had two more short stories accepted for print. And even writing one short story a week can be time consuming.
I'll bet. Good Lord.
They're 3,000 words, but 3,000 words can take a, you know, just coming up with a good ending can take a day or two.
Yes.
So no, I probably would like to write other stuff, but you know, I'm fine. My calendar's full. Right. My dance card's full.
Yeah. Are there topics that you gravitate toward in your writing and topics that you avoid?
No. As I said, because I'm given some kind of boundaries by the editors of the anthologies, I know what I'm going to write about. Mm-hmm. So if they want something that I'm uncomfortable with, I'm not going to write it. You know, things that are dark. Sometimes an editor will go, they don't want comedy. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not for me because I like comedy. I like humor. What I just read didn't have humor in it, but most of my stuff is heavy-handed with humor and sex. And I think the two together are kind of hot.
Oh,
so.
I do too. That's my idea of a good time, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult ever to get into a character, or is that just...
I can't speak for other writers. I have a feeling that we're all kind of like this, but if I start writing a story and I know I want to work with it, but I reach some kind of block, if I just walk away for a day, my brain will actually come back and tell me where to pick up. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to think about it. It will hit me where the story needs to go. It's a very odd thing. There's got to be a subconscious element to writing. I'm sure it's been written about, and I'm sure other writers will tell you the same thing, that if they just walk away, their own subconscious will tell them what needs to be written. And that has always worked for me. I've never had more than a day's writer's block. And generally, once I get over that wall, I can write all the way to the end.
So, but you don't write, you know, like lesbian erotica or
straight
erotica.
I wouldn't even know the words to use. I think I'm one of those fortunate queers who doesn't have that image forever burnished in his brain.
Uh-huh.
Don't know what, you know, the P word looks like in person. I don't want to know. The lesbians can keep it. More power to them.
Think it's fascinating that, you know, that women can write gay erotica, but they do.
Yeah, well, but they know what a dick looks like. And I don't know about a lesbian. There are probably lesbians who write gay erotica. I'm sure there can't be that many of them. I mean, unless they had sex with men, how would you know what to write? I'm sorry, you have to have some basis of what you're doing. Now, a straight woman, they've seen a dick. They know what it feels like.
You could watch pornography, and, you know, you would get, you know, the general idea.
Yes.
I mean, not that I'm trying to put ideas into your already fevered mind.
I have never had a woman in any of my stories ever. Mm. I mean, that was doing anything with a hole. Mm. Yeah.
So today, erotic artists abound, and there are an abundance of amazingly good written erotica out there, too. Although, in some circles, this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. Has this been your experience as well?
I don't know. I live in San Francisco. How unmainstream can I get? All of my Facebook friends are gay writers. I know nothing but love and the love and warmth of the gay reading and writing community. So, nothing
cool.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm
so you've never been on the receiving end of criticism for what
never,
you do.
Never once. Never once. My coworkers know what I do. I had to be honest with them because I'm very, if you go online, you will find me. There's like 50
so you have
pages.
A day job too then.
Yeah, I have a gay job. I have a gay job.
You can't say it. I love it. Talk about Freudian slip.
That's,
oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. And very unrelated to what I do at night in bed with my computer.
Oh, I see. Excellent.
And they know what I do. I mean, it would be too easy to find me, and
right.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, and who wants
be shocked.
To live like that anyhow?
Oh,
Lord.
Yeah. And come on, it's San Francisco. If you're shocked and you live here, something's wrong with you.
What do you look for in the work of other erotic artists, either written or graphic art?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you something I've never told anybody.
Oh, all right. And we'll keep it just between you and I. How's that?
Well, my husband knows, but I don't read other people's erotica. And it's a very weird phobia of mine, and I've never discussed it with other writers, but I have this fear. I'm so successful as an erotica writer. You know, I have hundreds of stories out there. I'm very well read. And I fear that if I read other people's stuff, I'm going to go, oh, shit, I'm not doing it right. Mm. You know, and I know I'm doing it right. But
obviously.
I have this fear that if I read them, I'm going to feel inadequate in some way. Mm. And so I don't read it. And it's worked for me, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, that being said, I read a lot of gay fiction. But I read gay novels that tend to not be erotic.
Uh-huh.
And I feel semi-bad about that because I have a lot of writer friends that I haven't read, but then I have a lot of writer friends that I have read. So, So I can't tell you like who I look up to in the erotic writing arena, but in terms of gay fiction, I read it all. You name it. I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of really famous gay writers. I'm good friends with Felice Bacano, who just won the Frontier Award at the Lammies this year. He's
he's one of my favorites too.
The be all and end all of gay writers, and he's the very first person I met in the industry when I started writing.
Wow!
And he came to my second reading when I was reading at the sadly now gone A Different Light in L.A. in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to hear me speak, and he's on my back cover of my book Divas Las Vegas. He wrote a blurb for
yes,
me.
I saw that.
So fortunate. I mean, how many writers would kill to have Felice Bacano write a blurb for them? But that's that's the kind of industry where it's a very supportive industry. I make a point of writing to gay writers when I read their work and telling them how much I love it, mm-hmm. If I love it. Mm-hmm. I take pictures of myself reading their books and I post it on their Facebook.
Oh, how sweet!
And it means a lot. You know, do it, folks. Email those writers.
We love hearing
from you.
Yeah, like I know Armistead Maupin and Alan Garganis.
Funny.
One of my favorite people. Oh my goodness. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you. What does the future hold for you and your work?
Well, I hope Divas Las Vegas sells. Please go buy it because I've already written the sequel. It's already done. And I really want to get it out there. It's hotter. It's funnier. It's better written. I think as a writer, I've been writing for so long. I think I only get better. I mm-hmm. think my best stuff is still to be written.
Oh, good. Interesting.
Yeah. I never stop writing. I have at least one anthology that hits the shelves every month. At least
my
one.
Goodness.
So it's pretty awesome. I have a shelf in my living room of nothing but my work, and it's like 5 feet long right now.
Wow.
It's great. I'm so happy. You know, when I first started, it was near impossible to get published. But you know, as I've grown, it's just become a dream come true.
Right. Any advice for the novice writer of erotica?
You have to be thick-skinned. God, you're so dirty. No, you really do. It's hard. It's a hard business. There you go. It's a hard business. There's so much when you first start out. The vast majority of emails and letters you get back will be people declining you,
yes.
And they're not going to tell you what you've done wrong. They're just going to say, "Sorry, we're not interested."
Yes.
So you know, just keep plugging away. That one was on purpose, mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, you'll find an audience and love what you do, and it'll come out in your work. And if you love it, it'll happen. I really believe that. I mean, if you have a dream and you want to be a writer, don't stop writing. And I never have, and I don't think I ever will.
So, finally, before we conclude, could you give us your website address again and walk us around? So, and we can buy your work on your site, yes?
Yes, you can.
Oh, good.
If you go to www.therobrosen.com, you will find my novels on there for sale, and all of my anthologies are on there. I have a printed work section. You can see all the magazines I've been in. You can see all the websites I've been on, and all the books I'm in are all for sale with Amazon links, all 80 plus of them. And come on, read out there.
Right.
Because
it's definitely
a hurting field. There's fewer and fewer bookstores, fewer and fewer publishers,
right.
And we're all just hanging in there.
Great. Well, thank you, sir. It's been such a pleasure spending so much time with you. You've been on my to-do list, so to speak, for such a long time. And again, my thanks to Brenda Knight at Cleus Press for making this happen. Thank you for your precious time, and we are all the richer for the experience.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks to all the Skype listeners out there.
Cool beans. Take care, kiddo.
Bye now.
Hey, pretty fantastic show, huh? Well, tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one shouldn't just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. So Hard is different. It's made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much kinder to my system. There were no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, rise in blood pressure, or altered vision. In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes, without any of the nasty side effects. So Hard improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection.
Don't fuck with me, fellas! This ain't my first time.
I know what you mean. But as I always say, every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way. So keep that in mind when you use So Hard. And just so we're clear, So Hard is not miraculous. It will not override an unhealthy lifestyle. But it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused, as well as more energetic lovers. Look for the So Hard banner on DrDicksSexAdvice.com. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.